Ask people who are dreading Thanksgiving next week why, and the word you're most likely to hear is family. Tricky families are at the heart of Relatively Speaking, a new production of three one-act comedies at the Brooks Atkinson Theater, and I'm pleased to welcome the stars of two of those plays, Marlo Thomas and Steve Guttenberg, to our show. Hello.
Hi.
Both of these plays feature... I'm getting there. This production features plays written by Ethan Coen, Elaine May, and Woody Allen, all best known for their work in movies. Were you familiar with their theatrical work before you joined the project?
I've seen Woody and Elaine's plays before. I've never seen a play by Ethan Coen.
Yeah.
But they're not only great writers, they're great directors, too. So you get a lot of wisdom and a lot of experience when you have them, you know, part of it.
Although they haven't directed these three plays.
No. John Turturro directed them quite beautifully, may I say. It's a big job he had to do three different plays by three different authors with three different casts. That's a big job.
And different styles of writing as well. Mm-hmm. When we don't often see this sort of thing on Broadway. There have been similar situations. I remember Woody Allen and Elaine May and somebody else.
David Mamet.
Right, in something off-Broadway many years back. But this is the first time.
Death-defying acts.
Yes, mm-hmm. That's right.
It's pretty good.
Well,
it's really a
treat for the audience. Carolyn Aaron calls it a feast, one of our co-stars. It really is. I mean, you get the chance to see three different styles of comedy writing. You don't really get that often. And to see them all in a row like that, it really is kind of a lesson in comedy.
Well,
don't you think, Steve?
Yeah.
Absolutely. As I said, Steve, the thread that seems to unite all of these plays is families and how dysfunctional they can be in different ways. This is something that will particularly resonate now because families become such a stressful situation at Thanksgiving.
Yeah, well, all the holidays. Interestingly enough, Marlo does Elaine May's play, and it's about... somebody who regards somebody as family, and they're not really family. And the way that Doreen acts, Marlo's character, is as if she was a family member. But she walks in on somebody, Lisa Emery, who's just completely surprised and has to – they deal with each other as if they're family. So family has lots of different definitions.
Although we also can say that in this case, Doreen sees Carla as a kind of a best friend.
Carla's mother was my nanny. Mm-hmm. So in a way, it's Carla and her mother. I think our play is really about three women and these two young girls who shared this one mother because my character's mother kind of just abandoned her to this nanny. So I got the nanny as a sort of a surrogate mother, and the nanny's daughter, played by Lisa, is also abandoned by her mother. So both of us are playing women who were abandoned by their moms.
You've been on the show three or four times in the past, but it was always in connection to your writing. Is it fun to go back to acting?
Oh, I'm always acting. I just when I came here, I was promoting my books. But I did Arthur Lawrence's last play at the George Street Theater last year, and I did the national tour of Six Degrees of Separation for 8 months. I love being on the stage. It's how I started. My first big break was when Mike Nichols cast me in Barefoot Park in London. And I was a baby then before that girl. So I really love the stage.
Steve, your play is written by Woody Allen.
Yeah.
It opens with newlyweds settling into their hotel room, but they aren't alone for very long.
Yeah, the evening is a great evening. Relatively Speaking, is such a wonderful evening of theater because you have Ethan Coen starting out with sort of an offbeat relationship between a doctor and his patient. Then you transfer, and then you see the mother and father in that. Then you transfer to Marlo and Lisa and Grant Shout in a relationship that is sort of offbeat but family. And that is a little bit – that's comedy and drama. And then you get to Woody's play, which is pure comedy, real broad, almost like bringing back a little bit of vaudeville.
And the audience cheers them. They love them.
Yeah. There's no subtext to our play. Just, you know, take the money and run, bananas, all the, you know, that.
It feels, there's a Marx Brothers stuff. Feel
yeah.
to it, isn't there?
Yeah.
It's very funny. I listen to it in the dressing room on the sound box, and I sit there like I'm listening to a great radio show, just laughing like mad at all of you. You're
yeah,
just
isn't that
so
great?
Funny.
That is the great part of the evening is you really laugh a lot. And, you know, to get a guaranteed laugh is so rare today that for your listeners, if they get a chance to come, they will guaranteed be moved and laugh. And that's, you know, that's just a priceless evening.
Well, one of the things they all have in common is a lot of great one-liners.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
So I never thought of Ethan Coen as a man who wrote one-liners. He's written comic situations in mm-hmm. some of his films, but most of us remember Fargo for one of the most gruesome scenes
right.
in the history of movies. When did he start writing this kind of comedy?
I've never seen his other one acts. Have you, Steve?
Yeah, I did. I saw some downtown at the, what is it, the Atlantic?
Yes, the Atlantic.
Yeah, and he has a very, very wry sense of humor. And I noticed that his one-liners come out of character situations as opposed to sort of a plot situation. And I think they sound pretty organic. The great thing is I think that the emphasis on the evening and on the plays is that we want to be funny. Mm-hmm. So these writers who are so clever, they're, you know, I think these one-liners sort of bark at them and say, you've got to say me. You can't not say this line.
That's so true.
You know, Marlo has a great line where she says, "Oh, Carla, heartless," which is a really great line. Did you see the show?
Yeah. Marlo also says, "I don't have the depth to feel this bad."
Oh, that's right. So great.
Yeah, so those lines just scream and say, you've got to write me.
Right.
And you've got to have this.
But that line wouldn't be funny if you hadn't already set this character up, if Elaine hadn't already set the character up as a woman who just could not face reality.
Well, she's described as a femme enfant. She even
who described her as that? You?
It's been described by critics.
Oh,
she wants the excess salt scraped off of a saltine
right,
cracker.
Right, exactly. Because her nanny used to scrape it off her pretzels.
Do you read the critics?
Not me.
No, I don't.
Now, I have yet to meet an actor who reads the critics. Is this something that you decide on when you join the union?
No, it's something you decide on when you're a young person and realize that reviews really affect you. You know, so
positive and negative.
Absolutely. I mean, if somebody says, "Oh, I love when she puts her hand on her head and wiggles her foot," and you go, "You never can do it again," because now you're going to try to wiggle your foot and put your hand on your head. And if they say, "I hate when she puts her hand on her foot and wiggles her head," and then you can't do that anymore. So it's just like, what do I need this for? When it's all over, when I'm done, when I packed up my makeup bag, then I read them, see what they thought.
Well, in plays like the one that you're in, Stephen, there are all these wonderful laugh lines. And when critics point them out and say, you know, Steve Guttenberg just got the biggest laugh when he said whatever. I suspect that after you read that, the next time you have to deliver that line, you feel an awful lot of pressure. I've got to get a big laugh.
It doesn't matter what they say. It's just one person. You know, if I walked down the street and I said, "What do you think of Relatively Speaking?" And they go, "Oh, I thought it was great." And then you see another guy, he says, "Oh, I thought it was terrible." What does it matter? You know, you sit there in the audience, and that's the reviewer, the guy who's laughing and enjoying it.
So, do you get different laughs on different lines?
Sometimes,
on different nights?
Sure.
Oh, sure. Some night they clap on a line, you know. But the line, you know, kind of the word one-liner, I think, in a way, is not as strong to me as the fact that each play is telling a story. And I think what's exciting about theater is that people come to the theater to hear a story, and we come to the theater to tell them a story. And so something very synergetic is happening in the dark there. And so it's really not about one-liners. It's about we have funny things to say within our story.
And the three story different, very different stories.
And exactly. And we want them to get the story, too, and understand the people. And as the plays go on, they laugh more because now they're understanding the people more. And that's true in all three of the plays. Because
mm-hmm.
your play builds a lot of steam.
Mm-hmm.
It starts funny, and then it gets funnier and funnier and mm-hmm. funnier because your dilemma, he's really the center of the story, Steve is. And everything is
the man who causes all the trouble.
Yes, he's the one.
It's just a desire for young women. Right? That's the big problem here. I mean, I'm not alone in that.
My guests are Steve Guttenberg and Marlo Thomas, two of the stars of Relatively Speaking, currently at the Brooks Atkinson Theater. And as we said, all three one acts are directed by John Turturro, but each is pretty different. Did he encourage each cast to find links between their play and the other play, or did he treat them
Not
as totally
different
of. Plays?
Yes. He didn't with ours.
No, they're all separate pieces. Yeah.
And were they rehearsed separately, or were you aware what other people were doing?
Well, we never...
Did you rehearse? Wait a minute. Hold on.
We're so good.
I got those notices, and I thought, that's not for us, is it?
No, we rehearsed at different times. And you give each company the privacy. The whole idea of rehearsal is to make a fool of yourself and really decide, not decide anything until it's at the last minute.
Oh, I went to rehearsals then.
You made a fool of yourself.
Yeah, that was it. Oh, those were that was rehearsal.
That's what that thing was.
Oh, I definitely went.
Well, you try to work out the lines with the other people.
Yeah, rehearsal's a great place to just fail. And
well, but here we also have a situation where these plays are all written by directors. The two of the plays are written by people who also have been performers. Steve, you've also directed. Are there an awful lot of chefs here?
Oh, yeah, but that's great. Everybody knows their position, and you've got a director, John Turturro.
He's the boss.
Actors. He's the boss.
He's the boss.
You got the writers who are smart guys. And you know what's great about life, and life is a mirror, and art is, of course, the mirror, is that how do you act? Or do you have manners?
Right.
If you come to somebody's house and they're cooking a meal and maybe you know how to cook, you see if there's a possibility where you can say, if you put a little salt in, it might taste better. Sometimes, that cook doesn't want to hear it. So from the get-go, I better not say anything. But this was basically a dinner where everybody was very involved.
It was also mutual respect. I mean, you don't have people like Ethan Coen and Woody Allen and Elaine May in a room and just ignore them. It would be crazy. All that
so
wisdom.
So did they come to rehearsals?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Sure. Yeah. You also have
And they came and they continue to come now.
And you also have 15 people in this cast, which is pretty large.
It's like a musical.
For a Broadway show.
Without any singing and dancing.
And 20 with the great understudies we have.
Right.
We have wonderful understudies. Yeah. So it's a lot of people,
It is a lot of people.
We should mention the Ethan Coen play, which is called Talking Cure, a prisoner in a mental hospital, played by Danny Hoek, and his therapist spar with each other. Why is he in the hospital in the first place?
Well, the coda of the play tries to show you why when you meet his parents, who are nightmares, hilarious nightmares. But I don't think we should say any more than that because it kind of reveals itself throughout the play.
Mm-hmm. And he's actually Danny Hoek.
Hoek, his last name.
And the coincidence, I don't know if you know this, Danny Hoek's aunt, Mrs. Hoek, was my Spanish teacher.
Wow.
In high school.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that great? And she's come to the show several times.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah. And I had some friends from high school visit, and I said, Mrs. Hoek was here. Like, Danny Hoek. She goes, oh, my. And I didn't even know Mrs. Hoek had a first name. I was like, what's Mrs. Hoek's first name?
That's funny.
Yeah. So Danny and Jason Kravitz plays the doctor.
Yeah.
They're both great.
They're wonderful. They're wonderful. And they're both also in Steve's play.
Right.
You've been in a lot of films: Cocoon, Three Men and a Baby, Police Academy. Adapted, directed P.S. Your Cat Is Dead, and you in a new film.
Yeah, it's a new film called Novel Romance. It's playing at the Quad right now.
You play a novelist.
Oh,
I play a novelist, and it's a romantic comedy set in New York City.
And this is a film you directed.
I produced. We found the script
great.
And. A friend of mine produced it with me, and we got a great director.
Oh, great.
Yeah, so it's at the Quad right now.
And both of you living in New York these days, there was a time when every actor felt that he or she had to live in Los Angeles.
Right.
Is that no longer the case?
Well, I grew up in Los Angeles and did all my early career there. So we moved to New York because my husband lived in Chicago and I lived in L.A., and we had to pick a city we could both work in. So we picked New York and have been happily ensconced here for 30 years. I love the city. I love the fact that you can hit the street and be in the middle of anything, any situation. And I grew up in Beverly Hills. to hit the street, there's no one there. You know, you have to have a car or you can't go anywhere.
But you also grew up in an environment where everybody was funny, and the people who came to visit your home.
Sure.
So do you think that you learned how to deliver a funny line as a result?
Yeah, I do. I think that
didn't hurt that you also worked on sitcoms.
That's right. I think that my sister and brother, all the grandchildren, everybody has the same sense of humor. And I think that you learn that at the kitchen table, really. You know, my dad was a great audience. He loved to laugh. Mm. And so he'd tell a joke, and he'd always say, does anybody hear a good joke? And then we'd tell him, and he'd fall over laughing. And we also knew that if we were in trouble, if we could make him laugh, we'd be out of trouble.
Did you grow up in a funny family as well, Steve?
I did. I grew up with much better actors than I am. My mother and father are hysterical. My sisters are very funny. A Jewish family. You know, Jewish families are very, very funny.
Mm-hmm. So are Lebanese and Italian families.
So are Lebanese and Italian families.
Well, I would think that the history of American comedy was ethnic, wasn't it, for a long time? And ethnic comedy was actually a part of our tradition until we became embarrassed by Life with Luigi and the Goldbergs and all of those.
But, you know, if you look at Happy Days, you know, the Cunninghams are a Jewish family, you know, or an ethnic family.
So it was all in the family.
Oh, so it was all in the family. Yeah. That's the comedy that comes out of it.
Right.
You know, that Yiddish theater, that old Lebanese theater. You know, but it's really, you know, I mean, I think that what happens with ethnic people is they have to be funny because they're persecuted.
Yeah.
So you have to sort of find the joy in life, you know.
That's why there's a lot of Irish comics.
Well,
like
this show is a limited engagement through January 15th. Would you want it to be extended?
Yeah.
Yes, why not? It's a
well,
good
I want to
place.
thank the both of you so much for being on our show. Marlo Thomas, Steve Guttenberg, two of the stars are Relatively Speaking, currently at the Brooks Atkinson Theater on Broadway.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for having us.